I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's March 14th, and we have a lot to talk about. It's MS Awareness Week, and I like to think about this week as an opportunity to achieve two goals. Of course, this week should be about increasing public awareness of MS. Multiple sclerosis is, on the one hand, a difficult and disabling disease, and on the other hand, it's a condition that carries with it so many invisible symptoms. And that makes it hard for the general public, including family, friends, and employers, to really understand what MS is and what kind of a toll it can take on an individual. So making sure that we raise awareness about MS is perhaps the most important aspect of MS Awareness Week. At the same time, I also like to think of MS Awareness Week as a time to remind people living with MS about all the ways that they can better their own situation, improve their own quality of life by making lifestyle changes like quitting smoking, eating a healthy diet, and adding exercise to their regular routine. Now, these are the kind of lifestyle changes that will improve anyone's overall well-being, but the evidence tells us that these changes are particularly beneficial for people living with MS. We know that one out of every two people living with MS will experience depression at some point, and I always try to remind people that while there may not be a cure for MS today, depression is treatable. So there's no real reason to suffer in silence with MS symptoms like anxiety and depression. And finally, I want to remind people affected by MS of the amazing research that's taking place in laboratories around the world. Research that takes us a step closer to finding cures for MS, closer to stopping MS progression, restoring the physical and cognitive function that MS has stolen, and ending MS forever. For a lot of people, one of the most challenging aspects of living with MS is living with uncertainty. Living with unanswerable questions like, is today the day I experience a relapse? Will my MS progress? Will my disability worsen? Will I be able to continue working? Will I be able to take care of my family? Will I be able to take care of myself? These are all very real questions, and while there may not be answers for them today, there are strategies that you can adopt to ensure that you're managing and minimizing the uncertainty of living with MS. Joining me to talk about her journey as a mom living with MS and to share how she's learned to cope with the uncertainty of MS is MS advocate Sarah Wolf. Also joining our conversation with just a boatload of strategies for living your best life despite the uncertainties of MS is Dr. Laura Hancock, a neuropsychologist at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. It's a big topic, and I'm devoting this entire MS Awareness Week episode of Real Talk MS to my conversation with Sarah Wolf and Dr. Laura Hancock. MS symptoms can come and go. They can be mild or severe. Relapses can happen without warning, and there's always a concern about whether your MS is progressing. MS is different and unpredictable for everyone, and living with MS means living with uncertainties, which, frankly, all by itself, that can be a significant challenge. Joining me to talk about how to live your best life despite the uncertainties of MS are Sarah Wolf and Dr. Laura Hancock. Sarah is an MS advocate, and Dr. Hancock is a neuropsychologist at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Sarah, Dr. Hancock, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, John. Thanks for having us.
Hi, it's so good to be here.
Sarah, why don't you start us off by telling us a little about your MS journey? When were you diagnosed, and what was that like for you?
So I was diagnosed back in 2018. It was a year almost to the day after giving birth to my first child. I had just come back from a trip and thought I was experiencing really bad jet lag, which was a combination of being tired and just kind of not feeling 100%. and noticed that my eyesight was not what it was a week prior or even what I was used to. And so I was able to go see a neuro-ophthalmologist just to check it out. And after her first examination of my eyes, she looked at me and said that I had optic neuritis. And just in trying to understand what that was, I looked it up and I, of course, unfortunately, tried to self-diagnose myself. And my neuro-ophthalmologist sent me to a neurologist. And over the course of a few days and a few MRIs, I was diagnosed with MS. And I think just the overwhelming sense of uncertainty was probably the first feeling that I had, and just being nervous and anxious about what that meant going forward for the rest of my life, and being a mom of a one-year-old and being relatively young, I felt that it was just an experience that I don't think I can ever really properly put into words. It was just very overwhelming and scary. So, and now it's been almost 5 years. So it's kind of, it's been a long time, but also a very short amount of time at this, in the same moment. So,
Dr. Hancock, what are some strategies that can help people better understand, maybe better process an MS diagnosis?
I think that's a great question. And I want to start off by saying, in my experience, there's no one size fits all approach to this. Everyone is going to have a little bit of a different journey, and everyone may experience different emotions as they move through that journey. So one thing that seems to help people is seeking out a community and sources of support. So that might be family, friends, other people you know who have MS. Maybe it's tapping into the National MS Society's network of peer groups. So in many, many communities across the U.S., there are people who have been through what you're going through right now that you could tap into and meet with. And I think Sarah hit the nail on the head with, you know, you want to know more. It's normal to want to know more, but it can also be really overwhelming when you start to look things up, when you start to Dr. Google and possibly getting some bad information. So I want to encourage you, if you're going to do that, to get your facts from quality sources like the National MS Society. And keep in mind, too, that no two people with MS are the same. I always teach my trainees when they're working with me to learn more about how to take care of people with MS, that once you've met one person with MS, you've met one person with MS. And you can't make predictions about that person's future because nothing has been written in stone. So talking, communicating, maintaining your self-care routine, that's really important too. Oftentimes when we're under stress, like receiving a diagnosis of MS, feeling like things are a little topsy-turvy in your life, overwhelming, if we stop doing some of the important things in our routine, like drinking enough water, like going for your regular walk that you normally do during the day, that can contribute to that experience and that journey being a lot more difficult. So try to maintain your self-care routine so that you keep doing those important activities, because that's reducing your stress and also helping maintain your mental health through that process. For some people, seeking out spiritual support can be really helpful. Seeking out a professional, a mental health professional who can help guide you through the journey. And also just fighting that stigma. Like I said, nobody's future with MS has been written in stone. And there are a lot of misconceptions about what MS is, especially on the internet, or just old information about what MS used to be. And it's not true anymore. So get your information from trusted sources and know that you can still live your best life despite a diagnosis of MS.
So when it came to processing that diagnosis, Sarah, what did you find helpful? And what strategy would you recommend to someone who was just diagnosed with MS?
I think one of the most important things that I did was I really leaned in onto my community, and my community kind of looked a little bit different. It was my husband, it was my family, and it was my doctors. And really, to Dr. Hancock's point, really finding that information from credible sources and really relying on them to help me find a path, and really being and feeling supported by them and also talking to them. And I think one of the most important things to that was also being honest with myself and being honest with my family and my doctors to let them know what exactly was going on with my body and my feelings, to make sure I wasn't masking anything, out of fear or maybe out of embarrassment, but just being honest and communicating to the people that could help me was something that was really, really vital in me accepting and also learning to live with MS.
Sarah, did you find yourself feeling anxious or depressed when you were first diagnosed? And if you did, how did you handle that?
Yes. I think that just getting a lifelong diagnosis is overwhelming and terrifying. And gives you feelings that you really probably have never experienced prior. And so I think most of my feelings was really centered on anxiety and just the unknown. And now I have two children. So the idea of what does that mean for them? Am I going to be the mom that I wanted to be or that I thought I was going to be? What kind of limitations am I going to have because of it? And just really being truthful with myself and kind of fighting the anxiety through communication and through leaning in on my community was something that helped me. One of the other biggest kind of problem solvers for me with my anxiety was talking about it and not bearing the brunt of what it meant to have MS, but being able to share that with other people. I think that it's kind of cliche to say, but there's people are going through things all the time that you can't see. And MS is a huge part of that. Like no one can tell that I'm sick. No one can tell that I'm having these problems. And so being able to talk about it and bringing it to light kind of helps make it a little bit lighter. And it helps with the anxiety. I mean, of course you're going to get sad. Of course you're going to get confused and mad and you're going to feel this kind of cornucopia of emotions. But it's really talking about it has really kind of helped me just feel a little bit of sense of relief. And the more you talk about it, the more people understand and want to support you, whether they have MS, whether they know somebody that has MS, or whether they're just genuinely interested in what's going on, because not a lot of people really truly understand what MS is.
Dr. Hancock, why are depression and anxiety so common in MS? And what are some strategies for coping with depression and anxiety?
Great questions. I first want to say I love what Sarah said about basically bringing light into the darkness and bringing those emotions out of those dark corners of our minds or out of the dark corner of the room instead of hiding it, talking about it. I think that is really powerful. And so I just wanted to highlight that. So we know that anxiety and depression are much, much more common amongst people with MS as compared to the population of people who don't have MS, but also compared to other chronic disease groups. So there does seem to be something about the way the disease is affecting the brain that increases the likelihood for depression and anxiety to take place. But in reality, the higher proportion of people who deal with this at some point during their lives is likely due to a combination of the disease itself and reacting to the disease, emotionally responding to the disease. As Sarah said, you can experience a cornucopia of emotions. I love that phrase. I'm going to steal that. You're going to experience all of these emotions, and it's hard. It's what you're going through is hard. And so acknowledging that is important. Acknowledging your emotions and knowing that it's okay, whichever individual feeling you're feeling is okay. It's not wrong. So it's important to know that those feelings are not your fault and you didn't do anything wrong. This is unfortunately part of dealing with the disease. And so ways to deal with it include, of course, I'm biased, but professional mental health care can often be very, very helpful to people. So that might be in the form of medications. Sometimes your neurologist feels comfortable prescribing those medications, or your primary care doctor, or even working with a specialist like a psychiatrist. Psychotherapy is very, very effective and very helpful for people. So there's psychologists, there's other mental health professionals. And I also wanted to make sure everybody knows that just because depression and anxiety are more common among people with MS, and so it's something that you may end up having to go through and deal with, that doesn't mean that we don't have good treatments to treat it. So even though the process of MS is causing some of this disruption in terms of the emotional control in your brain, we can still tackle it in great ways to help you feel better. Other things that people can do themselves would be maybe doing some journaling, getting your feelings out either on paper or to your tribe, to your friends and family. Meditation. Mindfulness meditation is actually really well supported in research, and it's something that's easy and free that you can do yourself. So there's free YouTube videos that you can look at online. There are apps that kind of walk you through it and provide some nice meditative music to go along with meditation. Staying connected with other people. So resist that temptation to just recede into that dark corner or isolate from other people, and do things that make you feel good or happy. I like to encourage my patients to do at least one thing every day that brings you some joy. And it can literally be anything, as long as it brings you joy and doesn't, you know, infringe on the rights of other people or hurt somebody else. So I guess maybe not literally everything, but do things that bring you joy. And I think, you know, speaking for myself as a busy person who has lots of responsibilities and who wants to take care of other people, sometimes we put ourselves last. So making sure that you reserve even 5 minutes for yourself to go for a walk, take a bath, talk to your best friend, look at funny videos of cats on the internet, you know, whatever it is that's going to make you feel some joy, and challenge those negative thoughts. Sort of be your own thought detective and make sure that you're correcting those negative thoughts that you have in your head. And the last thing I wanted to say is sometimes it's hard to know when is the right time to get a professional involved. And for me, that time is when those feelings of depression or anxiety or just overwhelming stress are really interfering with the quality of your life. So if you are not doing activities you normally do, which would include even day-to-day activities, you know, sometimes depression can get so significant that people are not showering regularly, or they're not, you know, cooking healthy food for their family like they used to enjoy doing. So if you find that you're not doing those normal activities and the quality of your life has changed, that's a great time to get involved with a professional.
Sarah, a moment ago, you said that when you were first diagnosed, you felt understandably anxious. How do you feel today?
Well, I feel okay. I mean, I definitely still have my troubles and kind of battles with anxiety, but I choose to find joy in my life, and I choose to really kind of almost take pride in being somebody who can talk about MS and experience it in a way that helps others. I think that it's a blend. I mean, it's day to day, kind of similar to the disease. There's really, really good days. There's some days that I could even say I forget I have it. And then there's other days that I can't see past it. And so I'm kind of just on this journey of being able to enjoy my life, but also being able to kind of strengthen my resilience in fighting a disease the best way I know how. And that is one, talking about it, and one, staying on top of my kind of understanding of what it's doing to me, what it's doing to my body, and also being a little aggressive in treating it. So kind of putting it first when it comes to kind of tackling the disease. But I mean, I have two kids and a really incredibly supportive husband that allow me to kind of experience life in a really amazing way. I just happen to have MS as well. So it's day to day.
Dr. Hancock, I heard Sarah use the word resilience. What is resilience? And why is resilience particularly important for someone living with MS?
Resilience is the ability to achieve growth and success when you're faced with adversity. It's your ability to adapt and recover from change. And resilience is hard. It's hard for all of us. And why it's so helpful and important for people with MS is because this is a disease of change. And as Sarah pointed out, you know, it's a lifelong diagnosis. And we don't know exactly what's going to happen in somebody's individual MS future. But of course, the treatments that we have are all designed to try to minimize the impact of MS on every person's future. Although this is hard for all people when we face periods of difficulty in our lives, we know that people with MS are most likely going to be presented with some new challenges from time to time. And so if we can increase your skills with respect to being able to make those pivots when needed, increase your skills to handle and cope with adversity, and to continue powering through and fighting to live your best life, then we're going to set you up for a very successful future, despite whatever MS decides to throw at you.
Are there things that people can do that will help them build on those skills, build their resilience?
Absolutely. What a great question. I'm glad you asked. So we know that people who have a higher capacity for resilience are people who focus on their strengths, who practice gratitude and optimism, who are addressing sources of stress and trying to lower their stress on a routine basis. They're getting adequate sleep. They're treating their depression and anxiety. They're finding and maintaining purpose in their lives, even if that purpose changes over time. And they're maintaining and using regular social supports. So I hope what you heard me say there is all of these things are things that we can choose and things that we can exert some control over. Another great way to build resilience would be obviously to work with a mental health professional. I know I'm biased, but I do have to mention that, you know, if you're feeling like you're trying some of these strategies and it's not enough, a mental health professional can come in and help guide you through the rest of that process. You can also think about, what are things that have worked in the past? You know, we all face adversity from time to time in our lives. And so sometimes you can revisit an old situation in your head and try that strategy that worked last time and see if it's going to work for the present moment, or maybe adapt it to work for the present moment. And I would also say be willing to define things differently. You have the power to redefine anything that you need to redefine in your life. One thing that comes up a lot with my patients is exercise. Because of maybe some physical challenges or because of the darn monster that is fatigue. So maybe exercise doesn't look the same way it did 20 years ago before you were diagnosed, or it doesn't look the same way as it did 20 years ago just when you were younger, but that doesn't mean that we can't engage with it and redefine that to keep doing it. So what sometimes happens with people is we get stuck in our heads thinking that exercise has to look a certain way in order for it to count, or it has to expend a certain amount of calories, or, you know, well, if I'm not training for an ultra marathon, then that means I'm not exercising. And none of those things are true. So you can redefine exercise. You can redefine what it means to relax. You can redefine what work means or how long you work every week. And embracing that can go a long way in terms of helping you build and sustain resilience.
Sarah, you mentioned you have two children. How do you manage the responsibilities of being a mom while you're living with MS?
I think being a parent means just being honest with yourself, but also being a parent with MS means being really honest with yourself. And so living with MS and having two children means I'm probably more reliant on other people than I ever thought I was going to be. I think that there's also a level of being a parent with MS means you have to, on a regular basis, fight comparing yourself to other parents and what their parenthood journey looks like, because it's going to be really different for you. And so I lean in on my husband all the time and my mom and my mother-in-law. It's just, it's a lot of finding the support and finding that community that can really help you with the daily activities. So sometimes I need my husband to take the kids to the park, and sometimes I need my mom to come and cook dinner, which I'm very fortunate and to be able to have people close to me, but it's also accepting that I can't do everything all the time, every single day. And that has been a huge kind of hurdle that I've had to jump in understanding my own limitations. And it actually makes me a better parent when I know that I can focus on one thing and get it done, as opposed to feeling overwhelmed with all the things that I have to do. It's kind of a divide and conquer strategy. It's like, divide what you can do, know what you want to do, and see if with what you can do, can you get to where you want to be, like, or where you want the want to do's. And, being a parent, just, I mean, there's a lot of sacrificing just within parenthood, but there's also a lot of joy and happiness that you can find in just being with your kids. And I'm very honest with myself and with my family. My kids are really young, so they kind of don't really have they're 5 and 2. So kind of explaining to my son about the nervous system is a little bit different. You can't really do that yet. But being honest with him, like, hey, mommy can't do that right now. Or, you know, or we're going to do this activity because it might just be better for my dexterity or my fatigue or my numbness or whatever it is that I'm going through that day. So it's just, there's just a level of kind of getting down to the studs of your life and focusing on what you can do, and making the most of that on a daily basis.
Dr. Hancock, what are the day-to-day challenges of parenting with MS, and what are some strategies for parents living with MS that can help them overcome those everyday hurdles?
Well, I think what Sarah said is spot on. That's definitely what I'm hearing from the people I work with. And I really like what she said about using her. It sort of reminds me of that phrase, it takes a village. And she is not afraid to use her village and to tap into them when needed, which I think is really smart. and is also going to be really great for her family. Her kids are going to learn so many good things from this experience. So the big struggles I hear from my patients are fatigue and managing energy, not being able to do certain things with their kids that they want to do, like working a full day and then going to a school play or a soccer game, feeling moodier or like they're losing their temper more easily, and struggles with, you know, maybe kids not understanding mom or dad's limitations and not understanding that they can't do certain things or that they need to take naps or need to use a cane, what have you. So as Sarah said, I think being honest is my A number one strategy. So I completely agree with her. Being honest with your kids, being honest with the rest of your family, but with kids specifically, you know, communicating to them in terms that they can understand. And, you know, and so maybe that's not explaining what, you know, what the myelin sheath is and how MS changes it, but you can absolutely explain things to them in terms that they can understand. And maybe keeping a backup plan or two, that's been helpful to some of my patients. So, you know, maybe they initially plan the day to take the kids to the water park or something, and partway through the day, that's just not going to happen. And so having a backup plan at the ready that you can use when you need it helps with the stress of having to change the plan. And it helps kind of, you can quickly transition the kids into this other activity. Or maybe you can watch the kids do something rather than join the wiffle ball game in your backyard. Tapping into your network and village, we already mentioned that a little bit, but also the National MS Society and other MS nonprofits have sources of support for you. So if you're running into an issue and you're having some difficulties, check into those resources. Again, these are good sources of information to see if something there is helpful. We also want to make sure that, you know, I think it's an easy, it's a sort of a slippery slope to fall into a place where we put a lot of responsibility on the kids to help mom or dad do things that they can't do. And some responsibility is obviously good and important for them to learn and grow up to be good humans. But we also want to make sure that the kids have space to be kids, and the kids have, you know, they get to time to engage in extracurriculars, to spend time with their friends, to learn those social skills, and to build other skills that are important as well as responsibilities at home. And know that MS is not going to change the fact that you love your children and you love your family. And it's not going to change the fact that you care about what happens to them and you care about their well-being. And don't forget that you're going to experience challenges with parenting or challenges in a family, because we all do. And some of those challenges won't have anything to do with MS, although it's very easy for us to fall into a place where any challenges we face must be somehow related to MS. But knowing that we're all experiencing challenges can help keep things in perspective and help keep you moving forward instead of getting stuck. And lastly, I would say that, you know, if you need it, if you feel like things are really hard, if you're feeling really stuck with an issue in your family, there's always professional help too, in the form of family counseling, parenting classes, couples counseling, if you need it. And your primary care provider or your neurologist should be able to help you find those resources if you can't find them yourself.
Dr. Hancock, how would you characterize the importance of connection for people living with MS, and how should someone go about creating those connections?
To me, I would characterize it as one of the most important things that you can do in order to live your best life with MS. No one understands what it's like to walk in your shoes more than another person living with MS. So even though no two MS journeys are exactly the same, this is still a village of people who get you in a way that no one else can, even though they try. You know, even though people like me who've dedicated their careers to helping people with MS, we still don't get it the exact same way. And there is so much value in deep knowing and understanding of other humans. There's good research to support this too, but just anecdotally, I see this in the faces of my patients every day. We seek out these experiences, but you just might not think of yourself as doing that. I mean, if you think back to when you were a kid and, going to school and starting to make friends, you would seek out other people who liked the things that you liked. You know, maybe it was New Kids on the Block. I'm dating myself, but you would want to be friends with people who liked the things that you liked, or who lived on your street, or who did the same sport that you did. And we don't ever leave the need for that kind of connection. But when we're talking about, a diagnosis that's going to last the rest of your life, it's even more important. And what you're going to get out of that experience is so beautiful and so beneficial. So not only are you going to learn from other people who've maybe faced an experience that you are currently facing, you are also going to be giving back as much as you're getting from those experiences. So the National MS Society and other MS nonprofits have ways of connecting with other people, but you might be surprised about how many people in your local community, in your, who go to your church group, who are also members of your school's PTA, what have you, could also be living with MS too. And once you start opening yourself up and bringing that into the light, as Sarah said, and talking about it, you might find some really great new friendships and deep understanding with people that will last a lifetime.
So, Sarah, have you found your MS community?
Yes, I think that just in being able to share my story and talk to people through the MS Society, through my family, through just my friends, my community is kind of built itself in a lot of ways. And I've been given the path to the MS Society. I think one of the most important things that the MS Society does is it connects you with other people with MS, and you no longer feel alone. And being able to be a part of an event, or even from a social media post or any of those things, like being able to relate to somebody in a way, and it's not relate like, oh, this is my story and this is how I got it. It's more like, they understand how I feel, that not every day is the same, and that I do have my emotions do change. And being able to not, if you don't feel comfortable talking to somebody directly, it's just reading their stories and finding this sense of compatibility in ways that you may not have wanting to actually seek out yourself or thought that you would have to seek out. But the MS Society has really, they provide an incredible cushion of people with the most amount of empathy and understanding that you could possibly find. And I think that that's been a huge kind of cornerstone to like how I've been able to cope and deal in just finding my people, and my people happen to have MS. And so it's really, it does something to you, whether it's like a chemical reaction in your brain or a feeling that you get, but like when you are able to tell somebody I have MS and they can respond back to you with, so do I, or my mom did, or my dad did, or my wife has it, or whoever it may be, and however it affected them, you have this bond with them, whether you want it or not, but it really allows you like a level of healing that goes outside of medicine and goes outside of going and seeing your doctor. It's finding those people that can relate to you and that you can talk to kind of without any sort of filter. You don't have to be embarrassed about this symptom, or you don't have to be embarrassed that it took 6 months to get you onto this medication, because they've all gone through it or some level of it. And it's really talking about it and being active in the MS community has really helped just get me through the day.
I like to say these are the people who know the secret handshake.
Yes.
Well, Sarah Wolf, thank you for sharing your story. Dr. Hancock, thank you for all you do to improve the lives of people affected by MS. And thank you both for talking with me today.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you.
It's amazing.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/289. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or a text. And if you have a minute, I hope you'll visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the best way for us to stay connected. The app will automatically download the latest episode of Real Talk MS. You'll be able to access any of our past episodes. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes. And it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you. The app is free, so I hope you'll download it today. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.